Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, sponsoring third-party research on a broad range of public management issues facing us today. In fiscal year 2012, the federal government acquired $517 billion worth of products through contracts. Contract expenditures amount to 16% of total federal spending. Purchases range from simple products, like office supplies or landscaping, to more complex products, like advanced weapon systems and program management services. As the difficulties confronting the federal government become increasingly complicated, so too will the types of services and goods that they need to address these challenges. The federal government is increasingly acquiring products that have qualities that cannot be clearly or easily defined in advance and that are difficult to verify after the product or service has been delivered. These products are called complex products. The acquisition of complex products requires more sophisticated contracting approaches. What are the challenges of acquiring complex products? What lessons can be learned from the Coast Guard's Deep Water program? And how can government executives most effectively manage complex acquisitions? We'll explore these questions and so much more through the works of the research team, Trevor Brown, Matt Potofsky, and David Van Slyke, authors of the recent book, Complex Contracting, Government Purchasing in the Wake of the U.S. Coast Guard's Deep Water Program. Brown, Potofsky, and Van Slyke discuss the promise and perils of government contracting while providing wide-ranging practical advice on complex acquisition. I'm happy to welcome to our show two members of the research team, Trevor Brown. Trevor, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And David Van Slyke. David, welcome.
Thank you.
So before we get into specifics, I'd like to explore the importance of acquisition in the pursuit of government agency objectives. A lot of folks who listen to the show may be familiar with other mission support functions like financial management or HR. But what is acquisition in the federal context, and how is it a key strategic enabler for government to get its missions accomplished?
So I think most people, when they think of acquisition, think more simply of purchasing, just buying simple stuff like paper clips and copy paper or office supplies. But the reality is that increasingly federal agencies need critical goods and services to be able to perform their core missions. So in the report I wrote for IBM, I highlighted the Black Hawk helicopter in the interdiction of Osama bin Laden and the ultimate taking his body out of the compound. Without the Black Hawk, the mission doesn't succeed. Today, the thing that's probably most on people's mind is the healthcare.gov website. In the absence of that website working successfully, the Affordable Care Act doesn't work successfully. Now, you probably don't think about that when you're buying a website. You think, oh, I'm just buying a website. But no, you're buying a critical, integral part of your program. And that's what acquisition is now. It's acquiring essential goods and services to be able to perform basic mission functions inside organizations.
David?
And I would say, you know, as Trevor's mentioning, it's really important to be able to get those purchases right. But another key aspect, really, for the listenership of this show is really thinking about being strategic as well. Mm-hmm. And that raises the question of, what are you buying from the market? Mm-hmm. Are you buying just products? Or at times, are you also buying something else, like the ability to do something that the government itself lacks the expertise or capability or the capacity to be able to execute?
So what is the federal acquisition process? How does it work? Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
So an expert would tell you there are hundreds of steps in this process. I'll break it down simply into three phases. The first is the pre-award phase. That's everything that happens before you buy the product. So that's determining whether you want to make the product internally or you want to go out to market. If you decide you're going to go out to market, that's surveying the market to see what's available. That's meeting with the ultimate consumers of that product within the agency to see what is it they need, which ultimately ends with you, the purchaser, defining what it is you want to the degree that you can. We want it to be a certain size, shape, and do all sorts of different things. Federal contract officials call that the requirements definition portion of the pre-award phase. The second, once you've decided what you want to buy, is the award phase. And you can think of that as the literal transaction. That's putting the RFP out, the request for proposal that describes the product and the way it will be purchased. And then it's meeting with potential vendors, recruiting people. It's almost a sales pitch to the vendors or potential vendors to come forward with proposals. Then it's selecting who's the winner going to be. Then the third phase and final phase is the post-award phase. It's everything that happens now that we've purchased the product. For some kinds of products, the post-award phase is literally just the delivery of, here's your box of paper clips. For other kinds of products, things like information technology systems that take a long time to produce, the post-award phase, once we've selected the vendor, means managing a relationship with the vendor.
David, did you want to add anything?
One part that we so often miss here is how critical the management part is once the contract has been awarded. So for a lot of individuals, doing those first two steps are critically important. And, you know, when we think about the Federal Acquisition Regulation, there's a lot of guidance, you know, right up until the time you make the award. But then post-award is where things become a little less clear. And there's much more discretion.
And just to follow up with the good points Dave just made, and as I say in this report, and I'm not the first to say it, buying is managing. So the whole procurement process is a management activity. It's managing a series of relationships and potential relationships, and those are management competencies and requirements.
And I want to get a sense. So we understand you guys have done a wonderful job of explaining the strategic importance of contracting to mission attainment for government. You've given us a sense of the phases at a high level. But when you talk about selection or the award, what are the criteria used to really make that judgment? And if you can tell us a little bit more about this criteria, how does it signal oversight, too? What are the three areas that we're talking about, and why are they important?
So there's a document that perhaps we'll talk about in a minute called the Federal Acquisition Regulations that basically set the rules on what's permissible in contracting. And one of the things that the FAR does is specify what the goals of federal acquisition are. And buried in there are two sort of approaches to setting the criteria by which we would judge an acquisition or evaluate it. One is what's called best value. And best value is a broader interpretation of what we're getting out of the exchange. And it typically involves three criteria, the sort of holy trinity of contracting. That's cost, performance, and schedule or delivery. Cost is how much does it cost? Did it come in at the price we expected? Performance, does it do the things we want it to do? And then schedule is did it come in on time? In a best value acquisition, a procurement official is allowed to balance each proposal along those three criteria and make trade-offs of, oh, well, this one's more expensive, its cost is higher, but the quality that we see in the proposal is higher. So one approach is to balance those three criteria. The other approach that's specified in the FAR is called the LPTA approach, which is lowest price, technically acceptable. So all those three criteria are still in play, cost, quality, and schedule. But here the argument is if we can precisely define the product, we can say as specifically as possible, here are the performance criteria. It's technically acceptable. Well, then we're going to focus on price. So we're going to minimize our selection to does it cost the lowest amount to produce it? So there it's a narrower set of criteria that define why we select one bid over another. And depending on what we're purchasing, it may make more sense to use one or the other. If we're buying copy paper, mm-hmm. we use the LPTA approach. That's the guidance of the FAR. Just focus on cost. You can specify the size of the paper, its durability, how many pieces, et cetera. Whereas if we're buying information technology, where we're not so clear what it is that we want, and we've got these competing criteria at play, then you are to pursue the best value approach.
Dave, did you want to add anything to that?
One of the things that Trevor mentions in terms of setting out the two approaches, best value for versus lowest price technically acceptable, is that embedded there are also a set of values, uh-huh. right? And with those values, a set of priorities. And so in some cases with best value, what you're emphasizing is perhaps a longer-term relationship or something that has a greater degree of complexity to it. You may be looking at issues that have been proven, you know, in an evidence-based way to be more effective relative to some other options. And from a cost-value perspective, it may be worth the extra cost to get a bit more on the value side.
Trevor.
They're thinking about, well, how do these three criteria help us fulfill our mission requirements? How do they help the acquisition of this product? I don't want to just make sure I'm following the rules. I want to make sure that I'm following the rules and I'm delivering something at the time that it's needed that helps the other people in the organization fulfill the agency's functions and does so in a way that's resource efficient so we can buy more of it or use our resources in ways to enhance the overall performance of the organization.
And that can be more challenging whenever the government is trying to purchase, perhaps for the first time, a product that doesn't currently exist, or is trying to engage the market around the production of a service, for example, that they have not bought in the past.
Well, you know, Trevor, you mentioned the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Requirements. Do you have anything more you want to say about it, particularly? Like, what are the key components?
So the FAR is it's a phone book. I've interviewed any number of federal procurement executives, and it's fascinating the kind of divergent views on, is this a good regulatory regime or is this a cumbersome one? One school of thought about the FAR from those who use it to guide their acquisition is that it is Byzantine, overly procedural. It's not clear how to get the information one needs about how to guide procurement. The other view from perhaps the more creative and crafty procurement officials is it's more of a recipe book. You can find what you need in there. And these rules are more suggestive than prescriptive.
And one of the challenges with the FAR, obviously, is, you know, every time the government purchases something new or wants to enter in the market for a new product or something to that extent, it begins to add more rules. And so part of the reason this becomes viewed as Byzantine and binding is that some individuals look at it much less analytically, you know, much more like a checklist. I've got to check these things. I've got to make sure these I's are dotted, these T's are crossed. As Trevor makes note, there are a number of very effective federal acquisition leaders who are thinking creatively about how to use the FAR and take some guidance and not view it as necessarily binding.
Sure.
One thing that's very interesting about the FAR, though, that's important to note, and that is there is no one single FAR. Mm-hmm. Each agency has the authority to supplement the FAR with its own FAR, its own acquisition regulation. So, for example, the Department of Defense has the DFAR, the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulations. The Department of Homeland Security has its supplements to the FAR. So this is a positive in the sense that different purchasers, different agencies can tailor the document to the needs of the kinds of goods and services that they buy.
Throughout the conversation and your insights, I've noticed there are some challenges to this whole process of acquisition within the federal space. Could you highlight maybe the top three challenges that are being faced and maybe some strategies on how folks can overcome them?
Well, the first is, as I just mentioned, is the variability in the FAR, or the regulatory process across federal agencies. On the one hand, this creates flexibility for the agencies, but it does have some diminishment of competition effects in the marketplace. Just makes it harder to sell to the federal government. So there are sort of two things that federal managers can do as they work with the procurement personnel in their agency. One is to take a review of the FAR, the regulations in their agency, and see first off, are there any opportunities to streamline this and make it easier for both the people on our end that engage in the procurement function and then the vendors who sell to us, and then to look how do our regulations stack up to other agencies? Is there any way we can streamline these and make them more similar to other agencies so we expand the marketplace? And so that's one big challenge. A second one that we haven't touched on yet is, and it's huge, and it'll span everything we talk about here, is the state of the procurement workforce. Right. You know, I think there's this belief that when you go to the market and you buy stuff, you don't need people anymore. But the reality is, particularly given both the scale of purchasing that goes on at the federal government and the kinds of things that the federal government buys, you first off need a lot of people to handle those processes, and you need an incredibly well-trained, sophisticated group that understands how they perform their technical function, but do so within the overall management structure of the organization. A third one is that contracting is risky, and depending on the kinds of goods and services, the products that you're buying, some of them are riskier than others. What are the sources of those risks is critical for again, a manager to understand how can they use procurement to achieve mission success. In the report, I focus on elements of the design of the contract as a source of risk. A big debate in the federal procurement world is about the relative benefits of what are called fixed price contracts, which set the price at the point of purchase and therefore put the risk of any cost overrun on the provider. So the vendor has to make sure that if you said it was going to cost $100 and it ended up costing them $110, they're eating that extra $10. Versus cost reimbursement contracts, which there's an agreement up front about what the cost elements will be, but the ultimate price of the product is a function of how much of it gets consumed, how much of it gets purchased, and how much it ends up costing to make it. And so in that situation, the purchaser bears the risk of a cost overrun. And so in 2009, the Obama administration, through the Office of Management and Budget, encouraged all agencies to review their use of cost reimbursement contracts and look for opportunities to turn some of those into fixed price arrangements, because the idea was that would transfer risk to the vendors rather than to the purchasing government.
What lessons can be learned from the Coast Guard's deep water program? We will explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns.